Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar. Tor!
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's episode, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 11. The heavens may have opened and it was pissing down with rain in several parts of the country. We won't talk about Saarbrücken because that's a Dritte Liga game. But we also saw plenty of goals, 33 all told from the 9 matches. Some were just spectacular, well crafted. Others left you wondering what was going on in the head department. To help me discuss all of the action from match day 11, it is the founder of the Milan Tour, also a sports journalist, and soon to be a member of the Karlsruhe coaching staff. It is the one and only Tim Eckstein. Tim, it's great to have you for the first time on the podcast. We know we're talking about this off air, how we've been wanting to get you on to talk about Zweite Bundesliga football. It's great to have you on.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. So you've waited a long time for me to get you in here, and now finally it happens. And end of September, beginning of September, we were fixing this date, and I was really looking forward to it.
Likewise, and as the saying goes, good things, all things come to those who wait. I've butchered that saying, but regardless, patience is a virtue. And one thing that's really teed up quite nicely for us is that St. Pauli are top of the Zweite Bundesliga. So we've teed that up quite nicely. I don't know how we've done it, but they were hoping to maintain their top status when they welcomed Karlsruhe to the Milan Tour on Saturday afternoon. There was a familiar face returning to the Milan Tour for the very first time in opposition colours. That was Igor Matanovic. And wouldn't you know it, he opened the scoring just before halftime. It was definitely against the run of play, but Matanovic was able to smash the ball into the back of the net. He did not celebrate, respectfully. At halftime, we saw Ilya Saad come on. Game opened up against St. Pauli, continued to really dominate. And it seemed like a bit of individual brilliance needed to break the deadlock. And it did happen. Joannes Eggestein, who we've spoken about the last few weeks, he's in a purple patch of form, and he added to his goal tally on 80 minutes. Just incredible bit of body control, great positioning, and a brilliant finish to get his fifth goal in 4 games. And St. Pauli were on their way. But could they find the winning goal? Because they peppered the goal mouth. And in stoppage time, they got their goal. As they would say, it's a Traumtor from Philipp Trür, who gets his first ever Zweite Bundesliga goal. And it was we call it Australia, and this is not bad language, I don't think, a thunder bastard, because he just hit the hell out of it. And it beats Patrick Drouez and into the back of the net. St. Pauli stay at the top of the table. They've won 4 of their last 5 games. They are the league's best defence for a reason. And I guess we should start with one of the biggest things that we noticed in the game last week against Paderborn was they didn't have Eric Smith in the back three. He comes back and you can see immediate control in the way that St. Pauli want to play. He's such an excellent distributor by foot. And it seemed evident very early on that St. Pauli were not only going to control the game, but dominate it.
Yeah, Eric Smith, he's so damn good. So he has so much in his passing play and his build-up play. It's so, he seems like to have another vision of football then. And his mates in the team, they try to adapt, to step up onto his level. So he's really from another world part-wise. He's playing passes I've never seen at the Milan Tour, and probably when he leaves someday, I won't see again. So it's pure passion to watch him play from time to time. And yeah, he had a huge impact. But Karlsruhe and also Paderborn the week before, they have made something that was a bit different to the other 9 teams St. Pauli was playing against. They focused quite harsh on the center of the field, and they were not like. So St. Pauli is using also some baiting For the other teams, or they try to bait other teams that they are pressing higher, they move upwards, and then they start to start their build-up play. Then they start try to play directly through the center, then on the wings, and then be fast. And in the last two games, Paderborn and Karlsruhe, they were not interested in moving up, in doing high press, high intensity running, and they focused on the center. And this was interesting to see, because it was the first time, the last two matches was have been the first time that you really see, okay, other teams, they do have solutions against this FC St. Pauli. So, and before, the nine matches before, St. Pauli was so dominant, and now they have solutions. And now it's interesting how Fabian Hützler will, again, will he find a resolution? Jackson Irvine said after the match, so that over the course of the season, other teams will find solutions, and you will have to find a resolution, another reaction on it, and this decides where the season is going to for FC St. Pauli. He said this, and Jackson Irvine is always telling the truth, as we know.
We do know this, and look, it's a great test for Fabian Hertzler's credentials as a problem solver, because I think the Hertha game is the one that really stood out for me, where they baited Hertha so hard, they were able to play their game away from home, and Hertha were like, oh, we'll press because it's worked for us, and St. Paul, it was, you know, straight into the trap, and then immediately quick on the break, tons of chances out the back, and we're going, but it is, especially away from home, I can see. We should see, it'll be interesting if we see it tomorrow night at the time of recording this,
yeah,
against Schalke in the cup, because Schalke have, and we'll talk about them a bit more in depth later on in Group One, you know, a team that is defensively still extremely fragile, but mm-hmm. but you know, and Carol Gerrits wants them to be a bit more active in pressing, just to show a little bit more determination, desire, and heart. And again, we'll talk about that later, but I still think what St. Pauli was still able to do, regardless of, you know, Karlsruhe almost allowing them to bring the ball to halfway and then see what St. Pauli are able to do, whether it's switching the ball and you know, getting the wide attacking players, whether it's Alpha Lion, who was yanked at halftime, Zard, Metcalf, you know, they've got such diverse options. And of course, you even look at the midfield duo of Marcel Hartl, who, you know, we wax lyrical about how great he is on the podcast, and there's a good reason why. But him and Irvine, all very competent in possession. But it was interesting to see that, you know, when Karlsruhe took the lead just before the half, how comfortable they were to sit back, because they've also had a ton of defensive issues throughout this game. And as much as 2-1 might seem a little bit flattering in sort of the balance of play where St. Pauli dominated, I think a test of it has to go to the game planning of Christian Eichter, where he saw what Paderborn did the week before, and they were able, to an extent, implement it effectively enough where it did cause St. Pauli a little bit of issues. And once they got behind St. Pauli, you know, it forced their hand, and eventually, you know, St. Pauli were able to overwhelm them.
Yeah, so they Karlsruhe was playing a 4-diamond-2, and this is the usual formation they use. So it was, St. Pauli was fitted perfectly. So the playing style, builder play of St. Pauli fitted perfectly to them. Paderborn, they were with Lukas Kwasniok, who is like really, and he loves tactics. He loves to switch formations there. So they are tactically always really flexible. They implemented this diamond shape formation in the midfield extra for the St. Pauli match. So, and I'm, yeah, as you said, I'm looking forward to how Schalke will behave there. So last time they were working with man orientation a lot. So with man marking a lot. And this was, yeah, this is not a good idea against FC St. Pauli, because as you said, with Afolayan, with Saad, also with Marcel Hartl, you have players. If you do man marking with them, you get a problem, because they are rotating around the complete pitch, and they are also good in direct duels, like one on one with Elias Hart. It's always not a good idea to do man marking, just purely man marking against St. Pauli.
At your peril, what I could see is the last two games with Schalke, they've played 3-5-2, that's the system that they want to play. We might even see them go relatively defensive and play sort of might be a 5-3-2 or a 5-2-3. I suspect that they will concede a bit of possession if it means defensively they can be a bit more structured, because as you said, man marking is absolutely not the way to go, because if you overcommit on the press, 5 seconds later, St. Pauli are at the 18-yard box and they're either whipping a ball in from the wide spaces or they've gone straight down Main Street and are preparing for a shot from range, because as we've seen throughout the season, St. Pauli not afraid to shoot from anywhere.
No,
except
right.
except mm-hmm. halfway. They don't have a floor at more. Well, Marcel Hartle might have a go one time, but but yeah, so big win for St. Pauli, as we know. They have big... Their fixture's not... It's tricky. Elversberg is going to be difficult.
Elversberg is really tricky, right?
Mm-hmm. We've seen how good Elversberg are. Then they've got Hanover before the international break. We'll talk about Hanover in 2 games' time. And then Hansa Rostock, which will be a very intense game on and off the field,
yes.
That one in particular. And we'll talk about what's going on in Rostock, because things are not happy there. Karlsruhe, they've got Paderborn and Hertha, and then return from the international break against Nürnberg. Let's talk about St. Pauli's friends. Hamburg SV, they made the journey to Kaiserslautern on Saturday night for the Topspiel game at the Fritz Walter Stadion. I just propose that we should just let Kaiserslautern play all the Topspiel games for the rest of the season, because they are fun, tons of goals. There's going to be at least some sort of chaotic defensive mechanisms. And this game had everything. 3-3 was your final score. And Hamburg opened the scoring. Brilliant move to get Jatta to get to Glatzel. And then Kaiserslautern doing their thing. They score the next 3 goals. Boris Tomiak with a good volley off the post, somehow snuck behind Daniel Hoyer Fernandez. The second goal, great cross from Richard Tashi to find Marlon Ritter. And the third goal, in the lead up to the second goal, Dennis Hanzi Kardunic has an absolute mare where he just kind of whiffs on it, cannons off his head, and Kaiserslautern are away. And the third goal is just a long ball. And Terence Boyd, you know, outruns Ramos. And then again, Hanzi Kardunic gets the old shake and bake. And Boyd, who has played, who's been second fiddle, but with Ragnar Ake injured, he finally gets a goal. It's a great goal from Boyd. And at 3-1, you're thinking, that's... I don't know. I'm not sure if Hamburg can come back. They get the second goal. It's a great pass from Meffert. Brilliant chip from Glatzel. Great bit of individual quality. It's got 8 goals this season. And then we just completely lose our minds, because Hamburg weren't really doing anything with a particular build-up. With Königsdorfer, Muheim sort of overlaps. And it's like, it's if you've played golf and you've sort of caught a fly lie and the ball goes 20, 30 metres further than it was supposed to, that's what it feels like with Muheim's cross. And Julian Kral just completely whiffs on it and it sneaks in and it goes through for a goal. And whoever was directing for Sky was just mean, immediately cutting to Andreas Luther, who's giving sort of the, yeah. Oh, he might have to get the gloves ready for next week. But Kaiserslautern nearly won the game. Aaron Opoku has that one-on-one chance late in the game. He hits the outside of the post. But ultimately, your final is 3-3. And it was entertaining. We can never say it's not entertaining. But Hamburg, this could go for a few teams, and Kaiserslautern might be included. Their limitation is going to be defensively. And you look at the individual areas in this game for Hamburg, you can tell they miss Sean Lau. We can talk about Mario Vukcevic until the cows come home. But the guys they've got, I feel like it's time we see Stefan Ambrosius at this point, because Ramos has had good moments. He was fine in this game. Hanzi Kardunic did not have a good game. Let's be clear. It was one of his worst performances of the season, and a couple of his individual mistakes led to goals. But it's a classic this feels like a classic Hamburg game where this happens to them last year. They go to the Fritz Walter Stadion and they lose. It put them, essentially, it led them on the road to the playoffs. And here, they unnecessarily get behind 3-1. And they have to put in the hard yards. And I don't even think they were particularly good enough to win the game. I felt they were potentially a little bit lucky.
So, Yeah, from time to time, I have the feeling that for HSV that they are missing the balance. Or Tim Walter is missing the balance. So the balance between offensive power and defensive stability. And so it's also can be part of the game. It can be like, okay, we're taking high risk in the offense or taking high risk of conceding goals just to even have more chances in the front. But I got the feeling if a match is not working or if a match plan is not working and HSV is like one or two in the back, then they're getting so, how to say, mindless from time to time. They're losing their complete structure and just putting everything they have into the offense. And when players like, so of course we can discuss about the center backs, and of course Mario Vuskovic, he's one of the most talented center backs that maybe ever has been in the second league or in zweite Bundesliga. But so no, I would say almost no center back in the world can defend everything that is coming to the all the counter attacks that is coming to the HSV with this structure, with this style of play. So it was, to me, of course, Kaiserslautern, they are also a high chance team. They are producing a lot. I think Ragnar Acher, he has taking the most shots, and they also have a really high expected goals value. But so, of course, for HSV, it's always a problem if something is not working as planned, and they're just getting then mind and structureless during the matches. And this is what we've seen. So Kaiserslautern, they must score the fourth goal. So even when they are 3-1 in front, I think it was John Zimmer who defended there on the last line then. But so they needed to do to score the 4-1, and then of course the match is over. On the other hand, this is also one of the strengths of HSV, that they can come back. They have the power, the offensive power, the individual quality to come back. We've seen this a lot of times already. Heidenheim last season, they were also Heidenheim needed to be like 5-0 in front. They were 3-0 in front, and HSV were coming back. So they always can come back. And so this is why also first game against Schalke, this 5-3. I mean, you've seen it there. It's like, so it's entertaining. It's really entertaining, as you said. I was sitting here in front of the TV and was watching the match, and it was just, I wanted to just, how to say, side watch the match and write my tactic article, my tactic analysis about St. Pauli against Karlsruhe, and I was not able to write any word into this analysis because it was breathtaking part-wise. So it was breathtaking. It was pure entertainment there, what we've seen. But this is not what HSV wants to do. Dirk Schuster, it's quite, how to say, I was not expecting that Dirk Schuster football would look like this. He's usually a coach that, of course, the counter attacks, the long balls to Ragnar Ache, to Tyler Boyd. This is Terrence Boyd, not Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd is a wide receiver of the Bengals, Cincinnati. That's Bengals. Right. Terrence Boyd. And so these long balls, they are part of the Dirk Schuster ball, which he usually plays. But they have so much, I don't know, is it individual quality or is it structure they have, or is it like speed they have on the wings, that they are producing so much chances? This is quite interesting. But they're also conceding a lot of goals, and this is not Schuster-like,
no.
I would say.
No, you're right. It's a combination of all three, because he sort of likes to mix it up. I find like his favorite sort of formation with Kaiserslautern is sort of the three with the two holding midfielders. Reichel's been really good for them since joining from Fürth. But it's quite interesting. You have like a number 10 with Ritter. Ritter's been really good for them this season, whether it's either in chance production, he's been getting the goals, especially over the last few weeks, he's been able to hit the score sheet. But typically they're favoured having the three up top, and whether it's been with Redondo, Tashi, you know, Opoku's been sort of better as a joker coming off the bench. He was actually quite, and sort of when teams are starting to get gassed, those final 20 minutes of the game, they essentially let Opoku do whatever he wants. They let him free roam. It's like, okay, you can stay on the left, but if we're going to hit the counter-attack, you've got to be ready because we're going to get the ball to you. And we want you to get out with pace. And that and the chance that he had, exactly that. A quick ball out, get him in a one-on-one situation. You know he's quicker than Ramos. You know he's quicker than Hanzi Kadunic. Put him on Haier or Muheim. Doesn't matter. We'll burn him. And like that's like they're I think that their biggest issue that they're finding is they don't know how to hold a lead. We're so the year and a bit that we've seen them back in the Zweite Bundesliga, they were the comeback kids. No team scored more points last season than Kaiserslautern from losing positions, and the last two games were almost a great representation of how much this team still has to grow, not just tactically, but also mentally. You have a 3-0 lead away in, you know, in the opening half an hour against a very good defensive Dusseldorf side and completely throw that game away. That's exactly what they did. They threw that game away. And here was no different. They're 3-1 up. Okay, yeah, we can make a fair assessment. They get the 4-1. Game's absolutely done and dusted. No question. Hamburg will be like, well, game's over, right? But at 3-1, people who've listened to the podcast know 2-goal lead, worst lead in football. Doesn't matter if it's 3-1, 2-0, 4-2, 5-3, because all it takes is one goal and momentum completely swings. I know some people don't like the concept of momentum, but it exists. And Glatzel gets the goal in 65 minutes, and Hamburg, for that short period, started to really dominate the game. And obviously, it was a fortunate goal that they get. That's just a complete brain fart from Kral, just completely whiffing on the ball. We've all done it. I've done it as a goalkeeper as well. It happens. It's you feel sick to your stomach. But after that goal, Kaiserslautern were on top again. They're a weird team. They would prefer to play with a deficit because it really plays into what they want to do. So, you know, it's hard to explain because once they went 1-0 down, they started to turn it on and they were really hard to play against. You can see Hamburg struggled to maintain quick counter-attacking play. But also, Hamburg were probably a little bit too aggressive at times. And as you say, they still haven't found that balance. And until they find the balance, there are going to be teams that who have a lot of quicker players up top that will, if they can get on the counter quick enough, will exploit them.
Yeah, so I was also a footballer, not really high.
Neither.
Second league, not second league, sixth league. And when Hanzi Kadunic, I'm always troubling, Hanzi Kadunic, when he made this big error, I was remembered on what kind of errors I did. So these long balls, I was not good in aerial duels, in aerials in general, and I always was afraid and like, oh, is there another way to stop this ball than playing this with my head? And then this happened a lot to me, that the ball is bouncing and what, it's so tricky. So I was like, I was not, of course, I'm never laughing about errors that are happening to players, but in this case I felt really bad because it reminded me so much on my own football career how often this happened to me. Oh, it's so bad.
Football is a hard game, but let's see if Hamburg can restore some faith. They've got Arminia Bielefeld in the cup on Tuesday night, and then they welcome Magdeburg. That game could end 6-6, and to be honest, I'll be all for it. Kaiserslautern, they welcome FC Köln. What a choice time to be playing them. And then they've got Greuther Fürth on the weekend. Let's talk about Schalke because we've sort of teased it. They welcomed Hanover, first game for Carol Gerrards at the Feltins Arena. And straight off the bat, really interested to see that in the telecast, the Sky telecast, they went full English. I loved it. It was great. I was like, I can understand I have full grasp of what's being said. Sky, give me a call. I can do those interviews for you if you want. I don't charge much, I promise. But the one thing that really stuck out, my English is great, that stuck out was that after they were terrible for 60 minutes against Karlsruhe, six changes to the team, which was to be kind of expected. Once, you know, Gerrits wanted intensity, they wanted a bit of belief, bit of desire. Like, it's sort of not just a care factor, but, you know, if we're going to win games, we need to bring the heat. And they brought the heat. They were much better. They get the goal before the half through Brian Lasma. It was a great cross in from Matrachani. The duel between Karaman and Halstenberg spills out to Lasma, who just lashes at it and gets the ball to the back of the net. Whatever that was said at halftime obviously didn't work, because 7 minutes in, they concede. It's a pretty similar goal where the ball was not really cleared out of the box, and Leopold, who has been pretty solid for Hanover this season, he makes it back-to-back games with a goal. But Schalke kept fighting. They kept the fight, and in the space of 5 minutes, they went from 1-1 to 3-1 up. The first goal is from Lino Tempelman. Oh, it made me sick as a goalkeeper watching how Zieler doesn't make that save, because that's essentially bang smack in the middle of the goal mouth. And the second one, the ball kind of squirted out to Karaman, who had a one-on-one situation. He had two choices, could have laid it off to Tirota, but he took the responsibility himself and he scores the goal. 3-1. You're thinking, that's it. You know, there's no more drama. There's definitely not going to be any more talking points. Oh, then you don't know the Zweite Bundesliga, because this was the biggest talking point of match day 11. Ball comes into the box. Andreas Vogelsammer is backpedaling. Ralf Fährmann is doing what 99% of goalkeeping coaches will tell you in those situations. It's a loopy ball. It is in dispute. It's near the penalty area. Make a play. Or you either make a play or you let the ball bounce, which no goalkeeping coach is ever going to tell you. He makes a play. There's a heavy collision. And the referee, Timo Gerrits, points to the spot, which, watching it, I didn't even notice he'd pointed for a penalty. I thought he just stopped the game, because Vogelsammer gets absolutely destroyed in this contest. Gets the penalty. Marcel Halstenberg scores. Game ends 3-2. Schalke hold on for victory. And this caused a lot of discourse, because I just want to know if this is the way we're going to call it for the rest of the season, because we saw a similar incident match day 7, Eintracht Braunschweig Nürnberg, where Christian Mateña absolutely just destroys Anthony Uja.
Right.
No penalty given in that instance. And the worst thing for Braunschweig is that Uja who's going to miss the rest of the Hinrunde. He's their top scorer. He scored 3 of their 7 goals this season. Like, if you're talking about, like, you know, Vogelsammer played the rest of the game, which is questionable in and of itself, because there's some significant contact towards the head area. But I guess I should get your opinion. Do you think it's a penalty? Because I see it twofold. One, as a goalkeeper, if you go, you've got to go. And sort of, if you collect someone, that's the way it is. However, if Vogelsammer jumps in that situation, it's a foul against him. It's a free kick to Fairman. I think there's so much grey area in this situation. And I don't particularly like it, unless this is the way it's going to be. If it's going to be called like that for the rest of the season, I can live with it. But if we've got references where it is going to get called this week, and then 2 weeks later we have a similar situation and it's not a penalty, then, yeah, it's just frustrating. I don't know how you see it, but that was my two cents on it.
So to me, it was the right decision to give this penalty. Completely right decision, because in Germany, or in general, there's the rule of some, I don't know, the German word is rohes Spiel. It's like roughing play or rough play,
okay.
Whatever. And this, in this case, this is the, how to say, the not the perfect, but a really good example of a rough play. Yep. I mean, you have some, even though it's a tough match, there are intense contacts, whatever, you have some kind of a responsibility also on other players, you need to be aware of what is happening, what your actions can have, what kind of impacts your actions can have on other players, and you have a responsibility. And in this case, this was, for me, I don't know the official decision if this was a rough play, but from my point of view, this was of course a rough play. And what was interesting to see what you have said, that in first place, I also was not sure if the referee's decision was on a penalty. I just see he stopped the game because it was such a hard contact. And this already means to me it must be a penalty because it's a rough game then. So
yeah, like having coming from the land down under where Australian rules footy, where those kinds of contacts and sort of contests happen on the frequent, and usually they're not free kicks. They're just that's in an AFL context, which obviously isn't comparable. Fairman makes a great spoil. We play on life's good, but in obviously different rule set, different sort of circumstance. But I did a post on it, and I wanted to compare them, because obviously two very similar scenes, but two completely different outcomes. And I would make a case that in the Nuremberg-Braunschweig game, that should have been a penalty, because it was, Matania wasn't exactly in control, and he fouled by the broad definition of it. He collided with Uja, and you know, they didn't look at it. But look, I'm okay with it if that's how we're gonna call it for the rest of the season. And like, that kind of consistency needs to be clear, because there's a lot of grey area when there comes to goalkeeper to opponent contact. And look, the collision was massive. Like, it was brutal. And I think, you know, if we're talking about duty of care, Hanover, without being ultra critical, perhaps didn't do enough to really assess the situation with Vogelsang, because that's a blindside hit. He wouldn't have been aware that the contact was coming until Fairman's sort of leg was driven into his back. So it's perplexing. But what's also perplexing is, you know, throughout the season we've been a bit hesitant to jump on the Hanover bandwagon. Feels like a failed test for them. Schalke are extremely vulnerable in this situation, and a great opportunity for Hanover to do something that they haven't done for quite some time, which is win against Schalke. They haven't done that since 2017. It feels like a massive missed opportunity for them, because we know how bad Schalke have been defensively, second worst defensive record in the league. And despite how sort of mid sort of tier Hanover were in this game, they really didn't do enough to test what is still a very inflexible defensive unit.
So you think, I thought that Hanover, they did it quite well. They found some balance. And if you look out for the goal of Tempelmann, of course, then you need to speak about Ron-Robert Zieler, who has really not his best season. So he was last Hinrunde, I don't know the English word for Hinrunde, first round, the first half of the season.
Yeah,
he was excellent. And then, so from this, so in 2023, I mean, Ron-Robert Zieler, he has problems. And this goal then fits into it. So Schalke, they were really efficient, I think. Hanover, they're not on this level. They did better also throughout this season. So I think especially with Halstenberg in the as a left center back, he's playing center, not only left, he's playing center, really the center back, right? It's leveled up compared to last season. So you see now that they have the individual quality. I'm not sure if their style of play, I would say I don't like the style of play a lot. But they have the individual quality, of course, and they are getting better. They have players like Fabian Kunze who are on the pitch that just to destroy the opponent's game, and he's so good at it. He's really good at it, and so it's interesting. And Hannover, I think you said it's a missed opportunity for them, because Schalke, they are still vulnerable, of course. And this was not so. They have won, of course. And maybe it's because I St. Pauli is playing tomorrow against them. I'm putting a focus on them. But it's so. The question is, was this already enough for Schalke to, how to say, to break free, to break through this wall of yeah, mist, of errors, stuff like this, of bad things that happened to Schalke? I'm not sure. So this was, so it was also a bit lucky. And of course, they are good. Players like Karaman and Lassme, they are also coming back from injuries. Mm. And they are so fast and they will cause problems to every defense of the second league. Individual quality, again, at Schalke is so, so high. Tempelmann, he's so good. So good. Uğur Draogo, he's also interesting. Drexler, always a player who's, how to say, bouncing between Bundesliga and zweite Bundesliga. And of course, Simon Terodde then, and Sebastian Polt. I mean, this is so I can move on and move on. The individual quality is so high, but I'm not sure if this is enough. And if this was the step that, of course, it was a huge step for them to win again. But I'm not sure if this was enough for Schalke. And I really can't tell in which direction Schalke is moving now. Is are they the same as Bielefeld last season? Mm-hmm. So is Schalke the new Bielefeld?
Well, I guess we'll find
out.
They
have Brian Lassme, obviously.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, and we know Lassme had a purple patch last season, but that was too infrequent. I want to see more games under Gerrard's, the sort of the system. St. Pauli in the cup is, I mean, if you want to test yourself about how good not only the depth is, but sort of the sort of tactical ideas that they want to bring in with Gerrard's, good test, really good test. But then they've got a Nürnberg side who are improving, who've got some really good young players. And then they've got Elversberg, who, you know, we could do a whole episode on how fantastic they are to watch and what they do and their sort of versatility. But we'll see. I don't want to jump the gun to you. I want to see some more games and get a bigger sort of sample size before judging where Schalke are. But the win was important in terms of just getting some positivity, a bit of morale booster. You know, it's been a pretty dour 18 months and now you're like, okay, we've got to win. They're going to win away from home. They haven't done that all season. So, you know, we'll take it one step at a time, I think, with them. Hanover, on the other hand, well, they've got the big Niedersachsen derby on the weekend against Eintracht Braunschweig. Oh, what a big game that's just become overnight. So we'll take our first break, and on the other side, we'll talk about Eintracht Braunschweig when they welcomed Fortuna Düsseldorf to the Eintracht Stadion. A new temporary regime for Braunschweig, but will it be the same old Braunschweig? Mark Fitzner, someone who played many years of his career with De Leuven, was given the keys to the car, but only temporarily, until they find a head coach who has the necessary coaching badges to be in the dugout. He was given the ultimate baptism of fire when they welcomed Fortuna Düsseldorf to the Eintracht Stadion on Friday night. Boy. There's not a lot of good things to say about what Braunschweig did in this game, but there was a lot to like what Düsseldorf did in this game. And to be honest, the 4-1 scoreline in the end is flattering because Düsseldorf had their chances. They had a goal taken away for interference. But Christoph Solis, Vincent Vermeer, who missed an unbelievable 1-on-1 like in the opening 5 minutes of the game, but he atoned for that on 15 minutes. Jami Ilsebet, Ayo Tanaka on the goal scoring sheet for them. Florian Kruger got his first goal in Braunschweig colours on 59 minutes. But, I think it almost sounds ridiculous in a particular way, but we've reached match day 11, so we are about a third of the way through the season. There's panic stations. You know, they sacked Jens Hartl the week before. They bring in a player, you know, someone who doesn't have the necessary coaching badges. You, without sort of hinting at sort of the holy moly, you know, this is going to be an extremely long season for them. It is going to be an extremely long season for them. They can't score goals. You know, we spoke about Anthony Uja in that scene before. They've scored 7 goals in 11 games. He has 3 of them in league play. Like, that is just horrifying statistically. They can't defend. We know the issues. They've brought in Ermin Bacacic, who was with the club during the Bundesliga period. He's just another injury-riddled centre-back to join the list. But there's not a lot of positives. They didn't do a lot of good things in this game, and it wasn't until halftime where they started to open up with Gomez and Sidi Sané, who most people will be like, oh, he's Leroy Sané's brother. How cool is that? He's playing in the Zweite Bundesliga. But he was at least... He tried to give them something in the final third, but woefully inefficient and terrible defensively. And it would be fair to say that the fans during the game, especially later on, they were not afraid to voice their displeasure.
Yeah, and the question is, what is their pleasure? So they were quite, how to say, quite explicit and were shouting, like chanting, like Vollmann raus with Peter Vollmann. He's the sporting director of Braunschweig. And they found the person to blame. So already, and this is not happening in the last weeks. It's also over months, maybe over years, that people, supporters of Eintracht Braunschweig are saying Peter Vollmann is not doing a good job there. And now... In the end, so everything started maybe with releasing Michael Schiele, who was the head coach last season, who still is not a coach who is like playing advanced build-up play. He was setting a team and constructing the team and tactical-wise completely to counter-attacking football. They also get promoted from the Dritte Liga to the Zweite Bundesliga with counter-attacking football. But at least it was an idea. So with Jens Hertel, that was the problem. So I haven't seen what kind of idea they follow offensively. So defensively, it was like, we need to survive, but they haven't in so many matches. So Eintracht Braunschweig, it's really dark there at the moment. And I don't see any lights coming up for them. Even though if Anthony Ucha is back at the game, I don't know how long he will miss, but it's still a few weeks, I suppose. But so I don't see. So the squad itself, it's like, yeah, putting together football players that have experiences in the second league and a young one who has a prominent VIP name, whatever. So it sounds to me like there is everything, every puzzle parts are there to get relegated in Braunschweig at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think there was a lot of hope heading into the new season. But the one thing that probably stands out, and you mentioned it, at least we knew what Michael Schiele football was. And they at least recruited players. They had a squad that could, in some way, play that footballing philosophy.
Yeah.
And you bring in a coach who has a different idea of the way they play, but it's largely the same squad. All you're taking out is Emmanuel Farai, really. That's sort of the big piece here. He goes to Hamburg. They don't replace him with a like-minded player. It doesn't work. It's you know, I mean, it just doesn't work. And we've seen it throughout the season. They couldn't play his system. They get rid of him. And look, credit to Dusseldorf, who just completely didn't take their foot off the pedal. They didn't let Braunschweig breathe in this game. And the goal they conceded was, yeah, disappointing. But what they did offensively for Fortuna, yeah, that's what you'd expect against lower teams. If you're a team fighting for a promotion, you have to bully the bad teams, home or away. And even when it seemed like that, you know, okay, Fortuna could probably take the foot off the pedal, no, they were all in on setting an example of a team that is definitely going to get, you know, without being so facetious, they're probably going down. There's, unless they find a free agent striker who is going to score 20 goals, it's not happening.
Yeah, they need to find more players. So you're not only speaking about a new striker who's like responsible for 20 goals, you also need new defenders. I don't know. I maybe Bikarčić can be someone who is helping them, but to be honest, he hasn't played since when. So yeah. He's also, yeah. I mean, there are so many parts in the squad that need to be improved.
Yeah.
So I have no vision that they can do it within the season and. So, as I said, every puzzle part is there to get relegated this season.
And then it's the question of who's going to be their next coach. And I think the best point that we can make with it is whoever comes in will want the guarantees of knowing that they are going to be there if they get relegated. And, you know, we saw it with Thomas Rice last season. Very common thing with teams that have been relegated. I want the contract. I want my guarantees to know that if we go down in this situation, I will have a chance to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And the names, you know, the potential options, yeah, it doesn't scream a lot of confidence for them. That we've already mentioned they've got Hanover, but the week after they've got Osnabrück at home before the international break, that will be a game that, oh boy, that could be a real interesting affair for the Saturday afternoon game. For both. Yeah. And we're going to talk about Osnabrück in Group 3. Düsseldorf at Unterhaching, who won in the Dritte Liga on the weekend. That's a DFB Pokal game before they welcome Wiesbaden on Friday night to the Merkur Spiel Arena. So Düsseldorf looking very good, looking very handy in second place. Obviously, defense has really stood out. Second best defensive record, equal second best defensive record, just two goals worse than St. Pauli. But they've shown that they can put the ball in the back of the net, 23 goals scored. Also, this is their best start to a campaign, or best opening 11 games of a season in the last six campaigns. They've scored 21 points in 11 games. So all positive signs for Daniel Tuyun. A team that is slowly turning it around. They're marching up the table is Hertha BSC. They welcomed Paderborn at the Olympiastadion. Just over 35,500 made their way on Saturday afternoon to see Pau Dardai side win 3-1. And something that is going to become as common as bread on butter is Fabian Riese to Haris Tabakovic, because those two teed up twice in this game. Both were crosses to the near post. Both were extremely poorly defended, and both resulted in Tabakovic goals. He's now back at the top of the hill for the Toyota Canon. He's got 9 goals this season. Chonjo Kenny scored his first goal of the season. It was a beautiful goal from him. Florent Moslier got the only goal for Paderborn. He's got 6 goals for them and really played a bit of a lone hand for them. We talk about Riese and Tabakovic. The only combination that has had as many goals as those two in terms of Riese to Tabakovic is Jackson Irvine to Elias Saad. They've connected on 3 occasions. But a couple of talking points in this game. One is the Tony Leissner situation.
Yeah.
Now, in the pictures they showed, now you don't see Dardai near the picture. But for me, that should have been a red card. He should not have been on the pitch. It's clear and obvious that he was impeding Sirlot Conte, who's one of the fastest players in the league, on a potential goal-scoring opportunity. He eventually gets sent off in this game, but that should have been a red card. And maybe the game is a little bit different. But I was just surprised at the tactics that Hertha went with. They were very heavy on the wing play, especially in the first half. But they were ultra-efficient. They barely had any of the ball, but when they did go forward, they made sure they made the most of their opportunities.
So the interesting thing is that how well Fabian Riese is doing their thing, I think. So he's, you know, he's good. You already know, have known, you have seen him at Holstein Kiel. And he was a player who was always like lighting up, but then he gets blown up in the dark for parts of the game. And since he's playing at Hertha, he's so much... Yeah, presence there, so much confidence, and he's really good. And he, at the first parts of the season, he was the man who was almost the only one who was playing high level zweite Bundesliga football in the complete squad. And now he's like, it's getting better. Haris Tabakovic, of course, he's a pure striker. He has complete set of a pure striker. And now I think Hertha is getting better and better. I think they get a problem now with Leissner and Kempf missing.
Yep, that's right.
This will be a problem for them, but still the individual quality again at Hertha is really high. And for Schalke and Hertha, it's the same for me. Like for Schalke and Werder Bremen 2 years ago, they have so much individual quality, you need to expect them to that they can run the table in the second half of the season. And Hertha is like this. So yeah, I'm not sure you for the first half of the season for teams like this, it's like the task is to not lose the contact to the promotion places, ranks there. And Hertha is doing exactly this. Schalke, let's see. But Hertha is interesting. And their play on the wings with Winkler and Reze is impressive. So it's like, so you have HSV there with Jatta and Dompe, who has not, any longer the level they had the years before, I would suppose. Then, of course, São Paulo is interesting with Metcalf and Afolayan and especially Saad. But I think Hertha BSC, they have the best wingers of the league with Reze and Winkler. And this is, they are responsible for their offensive play.
I also like that they can be super aggressive with overlaps. Karbovnik is known for being a very streaky offensive. Well, he's essentially become an offensive fullback where... But he is, in particular, someone that last season, if watching him in Dusseldorf, like, okay, it's awesome because he gets down, he's going to get into these great offensive areas to put a ball into the box or cut inside and have a shot. But the moment the ball gets in transition, you're like, oh no, he's going to be exploited. But he has improved on that a little bit this season. You can tell that he's got a bit more self-confidence. But what that defensive mix looks like against Hansa Rostock without Leisner, without Kempf, will be really interesting to see what kind of solutions Dardai comes up with. But yeah, look, they've shown that they're really good at home, Hertha. They've made the Olympiastadion quite a difficult place to play. They seem to score a lot of goals. they will have tougher roads ahead at the Olympiastadion. But yeah, I think they've certainly improved. They've developed a bit more of an identity. This was a bit of one of those sort of outlier games where it's not very often you see a home team have less than 30% of the ball. But what they did with the ball, and that's sort of the key possession. You can have possession without doing anything, and that's not to say Paderborn weren't getting the ball into good areas. They had 17 shots on goal. They were dangerous. They just weren't as efficient as Hertha, who every time they got the ball to Reza or Winkler, you would look for 25 in white and blue because you know that's where they were going. And yeah, they look good. I think Hertha, they're on the way. But their next three games, Rostock, they've got Mainz in the Cup on Wednesday, which will be an interesting game given how Mainz are going in the Bundesliga. Karlsruhe before the break, which will be a nice one of those fan friendship games that'll be friendly for... until it's not friendly, and then it's friendly after the game. And then Hanover, where's Paderborn? Look, we know how great Florent Meslier is. I would argue he's elevated his game this season to the point where he could be Bundesliga quality. I was disappointed when Schalke didn't sign him on a personal level because he would have been a great sort of solution to replace Rodrigo Salazar. But
you think so? There's place for him. So I like Lino Tempelmann.
Depending on what the system is, because you can play Muslier as a wing back. He can play left midfield. You can play him as a 10. He's quite versatile. Just get him the ball and let him, as they say, let him cook. That's the way. Anyway, Paderborn are also in the Cup on Wednesday. They've got Freiburg away. Then they've got Karlsruhe and Nürnberg before returning from the break against Elversberg. Speaking of Nürnberg, let's talk about them because they...
I want to say something about Paderborn.
Please.
Because
because
it's almost the same as with the other club that has been relegated before the season with Schalke or with Hannover and Schalke. They made a really good match to say this. So, of course, Hertha was quite efficient. As you said, they had ball possession of less than 30%. It's ridiculous. But so... Paderborn, they made a really good match. They were a bit unlucky in the important situations. Of course, if Leisner is sent off earlier, then the game might take another another direction. But Paderborn, they are, I don't know how to say. So I have the feeling that Paderborn is one of the, can be at times one of the best teams in the league, and at other times they are playing like on a level you haven't seen them for years. So on such a low level, and I don't know what's the, I haven't found the key to explain Paderborn this season. It's so, it's a dark horse, like Karlsruhe, a bit like Karlsruhe. They can also play in both directions, both levels.
I would say three things. Well, not three, three players: Julian Justvan, Ron Schellenberg, Marvin Pieringer.
Yeah,
and
right,
not being able to replace those three consistently. You look at like the rotation of players that Kwasniuk has tried up top. You know, we saw Bill Beer again, and I thought Bill Beer with Conte was good. We saw Antonio Grimaldi. They don't even. What do you do with Max Kruse? They're still trying to figure out what is going to be a sustainable system fit. And you can see that they, in many ways, they're going through a lot of growing pains in the process of finding what works with this squad. And that's not a great thing to say, 11 match days to a season, but that's just, it's just where they are. They just don't know what their best starting 11 is, because week to week they might go unchanged, and that same 11 grossly underperforms what they did the week prior. And they haven't had the same sort of strong goalkeeping from Jani Kut as well. And yeah, they almost seem a little bit lost in sort of what direction they want to go, because the Max Kruse signing was almost like, when you sign someone of such ilk, you're thinking, oh, we're in the hunt for at least top six, maybe challenge the promotional places. But I think what's been proven is that, even though they've made some nice signings, that's not where they're at. And maybe the last few seasons are a representation of overperformance, which is unfair, because Kwasniok's done a great job in taking over Stefan Baumgart's position and sort of regenerating this squad into being a side that has great footballing identity. They, very strong recruitment as well. But this league's hard, and if you can't get over to the promotional hump, you typically have that season where you just slide down the table, and we've seen it happen before, where, I think Kaiserslautern, a decade ago was a great example, where they finished fourth twice, and then we didn't see them anywhere near that until they returned back to the Zweite Bundesliga. So, there's a lot going on with Paderborn, but they're working with a lot less than other clubs are, and you can see that this season, more than any, they're really suffering from not being able to, I think they're just teams that have just overtaken them with just a better plan. But we'll see. We should talk about Nuremberg, because we like Nuremberg are doing some good stuff. They played Holstein Kiel. Now Kiel are having a great season themselves, but they'll be frustrated that they didn't get anything out of this game. 2-0 defeat for Marcel Rapp's side. Goals coming from Tim Hanverker and Chan Uzan, who's just unbelievably good for a player of his age to really be the focal point of what your club is trying to do. It's quite extraordinary. Also, the versatility in the way they use him, because he can play in deeper positions, but here in this situation, playing as a virtually as a striker. His goal was wonderful. They win possession through Schleimer. Ball into Ozan. Wonderful goal. I just can't help but think that Kiel will be just bitter in certain situations, because they had some real strong patches of control where they were creating a bunch of opportunities on goal, but they were just... They go through these patches where they can really dominate games, and then they get nothing out from them. And you can see that Nuremberg after the game, they might have felt like they were a little bit lucky, but at the end of the day, the only statistic that matters in this game is the scoreline. And Nuremberg found, when their opportunities came through Hanverker and Ozan, they took them.
Yeah, so I think Nuremberg deserved it in the second half. So in the first half, it was Holstein Kiel who have deserved it to take the lead already, but in the second half, I think Nuremberg was quite good. I tried to figure out what kind of how they adapt their formation in the second half, but I haven't figured it out. So, but it's quite interesting because Nürnberg under Christian Fjell, they're also playing some kind of advanced build-up play, and they have also the players. I mean, Lukas Schleimer, he's, for me, it's an interesting player because he's not the typical striker there. But he's really good in his ball handling and also good to see spaces, also in narrow situations. And there are a lot of those players, Mats Möller-Dahli, also Uzun. These are players like Timo Schulz, the former coach of FC St. Pauli. He always said Zocker, so the German word Zocker, it's something like gambler. So gambling players who are technical, really good, and also have some ideas. Who are not the players with the most physical conditions there, that is also needed in Zweite Bundesliga. So you need some kind of a balance in the squad to balance this out, that you have some gamblers in there. We come to Barış Artık and Tatsuya Ito then. They are mostly the same. And it's also this physics or physis is missing there in Magdeburg at times also. But at Nürnberg at the moment, I think it's balanced there and it's interesting. And it's, so this is one of the teams that we were speaking about, Paderborn, and this is maybe one of those teams that, yeah, how to say, have overtaken Paderborn in this case. They had two dark years, so especially the last season, but they have figured out the main points there. Christian Fjell is doing a great job there, and I like it a lot. I like them to see play because it's, yeah, because there are some things in their build-up play that are quite interesting.
Yeah, and I think they were a massive question mark given what Fjell's resume in the division was. He had a very short tenure with Dynamo Dresden, and you can see elements of what he tried to do with Dresden but didn't have the players, not even close to having the players to do that with. But yeah, I was really interested with their recruiting through the summer. Like Okunuki, for example, has really taken to the Zweite Bundesliga quite well, much like a duck to water. But yeah, you can see their flexibility in the way they want to play, and at times it can be quite positionless in sort of the approach where players can, these, a lot of the players that are in their starting 11, especially forward of the ball, can play multiple positions, and they're very comfortable in those particular roles. And having that sort of flexibility is really aiding Nürnberg's growth and development. Because if you sort of take it back this time last season, we were entering the Marcus Weinziel era, and what a miserable, no offense to Marcus as a coach, yeah, but that's miserable football. And it wasn't exactly what that team was built to do, because it was built under Robert Klaus's footballing philosophy. But, you know, Hecking, who, if we're being honest, if you didn't get this right, he's not there. Like, that's just the onus of the situation. You know, he brought Fjell in as the U23 coach, but also to assist him during the sort of survival period last season. And they've sort of developed a team that fits Fjell's style of football. Now, if they can continue their improvement defensively, which was one of their biggest Achilles heels last season, and scoring goals was the other one, then you feel, yeah, I know what the two worst things to be: bad defensively, bad offensively. But they're scoring goals. They've 18 goals this season. They're the only team in the top half that has a negative goal difference, 19 goals conceded. But yeah, you can see improvement. 3 wins in their last 4 games says that. Kiel, on the other hand, look, there was a situation where they might have warranted a penalty for handball in the first half. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate. There's not really much you can, like, it looks like a handball to me, but I'm not the referee in charge of the game. But yeah, look, they've shown a lot more growth than I think also that some of us wouldn't have expected. Lots of trust in such a young defensive core as well. And look, the first goal is a bit unlucky. It's a deflection off the defender, sends the keeper the wrong way. But the second goal would be more upsetting given it was essentially turnover inside their offensive third, and it was one pass and shoot. But what's your impression been of Kiel so far? Like, if we're 11 match days in, they're currently sitting in fourth place. Like, they are performing well over what some of us would have expected.
So they were performing at the beginning of the season where they were performing quite well in counter-attacking, right? So, and if you are then, so one of the problems for teams that are focused on counter-attack play is if they have success with it, other teams, they won't be more active offensively. They try to not give them those situations for counter-attacking play. And this might be, I'm not sure, but this might be one of the reasons for Kiel why this is, they started quite well. They played a huge game at Schalke, and there again, okay, yeah, it was another Schalke than it might be today, I don't know, but again, to have a focus on counter attacks means that if you have success, you need to have come up with another solution. But because, yeah, it's not only working with this focus, especially if you win a lot of games, because yeah, other teams, they will adapt to this, and then other teams say, okay, you have a focus on counterattacks. I have no interest in standing high against you, and then you need another idea. And there, I don't know if the players are not, how to say, if the quality of players is not high enough. I think there are really high quality players and interesting players, but at the moment it seems to me, as you said, they are quite young. They need to develop, and it's good. It's interesting. It's really interesting how Kiel managed this huge change in the squad compared to last season. It's good to see, and it's interesting to see that Marcel Rapp is looking out for this counter attack. But they need to develop. They need to come up with other solutions in their build up play. And so I haven't seen so much of them, to be honest. But from what I have seen, I think so. They have some kind of a season for developing, and it will be already a team to watch for next season.
Absolutely. They've got Magdeburg in the cup before making the trip to Osnabrück on Saturday afternoon. Nürnberg have got Rostock in the cup before welcoming Schalke to the Max Morlock Stadion. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our final three games, starting in Magdeburg when they welcomed Elversberg. Magdeburg have been on a horror slide of late. They were hoping to turn the tide when they welcomed Elversberg on Sunday afternoon. It was a celebratory occasion for Elversberg. Horst Steffen was congratulated for his fifth year being in charge of Elversberg. He led them from the Regionalliga Südwest to the Zweite Bundesliga, and he was hoping to cap off the Sunday with a victory. Well, they did do that. But boy, did they have to work for it. They started brilliantly in this game. A wonderful pass from Schnellbacher to find Yannick Rockhout, who times his run to perfection. And he scores past Dominic Reimann. Maurice Neubauer gets the second goal. It's a pop from range. Goes through a gaggle of defenders past Reimann. Second half was all Magdeburg. They really dominated the game. They had a ton of opportunities, and their goal came on 70 minutes through Conor Krumpicki. Brilliant finish. Great ball across the box. And Krumpicki gets his second goal of the campaign. They peppered and peppered. There was a penalty that they won initially from Tatsuya Ito when he was fouled by Shahin. But thankfully, this is why we have the technology, because Ito was... I don't even think he was touched. The angle that they showed was terrible. But it was clear that was a bit of a dive from Ito trying to win the penalty. They couldn't find the secondary goal. It's another defeat for Magdeburg, who are in real struggle, winless in their last five games. We seem to know what their problems are. We've lamented that throughout the course of the season defensively. And if you look at the two goals, the first one, again, seems rather unnecessary. Like, they play extremely high line. They want to be aggressive. We know what kind of football Tietz wants to implement. But a lot of that has to do with on the ball process. When they don't have the ball and teams are able to counter quickly, they're extremely vulnerable. And it does seem like at some stage we are going to reach a fork in the road with Christian Tietz. I love Christian Tietz football. I'm a big advocate for it because it's entertaining. But maybe with this squad of players, just the defensive setup over the last year and a half has been extraordinarily concerning. and the lack of growth over that period of time, and it was once again on display here against Elversberg.
So the question is for Magdeburg, how so is it? So it's a risk to take for them. So they decided to take that risk to be to have this offensive power, and of course to be to have not this stability in defense. So I would say it's a risk to take, and then you have to decide if you said it. So when the question is on Titz, on his development with the squad. So the question is the squad better than the league position at the moment? So is what would you say? So to me, it's really difficult. They have players, of course, Barış Artic. He's one of the players that is so much in the focus. But I would suggest he would have problems in other teams because he's so free in terms of his playing style, and he won't be that free at other teams because it's Christian Titz who's working together with him. Then of course there are players like If Hartley. I like him a lot. There were rumors of him moving to Hamburg before the season. And then behind those, I'm not sure if this is a squad that at the beginning of the season everyone was saying this is one of the teams that can maybe get promoted, and because of the playing style, I would also say, yeah, this is interesting. It's an interesting team. But you have Artic, you have If Hartley, and then I like Condé in terms of his playing style, but he's also lacking of defensive stability in the center, and this is needed in his position. And so I'm a bit wondering, so if this kind of is the league position where they belong to.
It has to be, doesn't it? Like I would think that they're probably between 7 and 12 right now. They just sit outside that in 13th. But just their best and their worst is so far apart. And at their best, they can cover for their defensive misgivings, and they can cover for the mistakes. Like the Hertha game is the greatest example of what their best and their worst looks like, because at their best they are so fun to watch. They're great the final third. They have multiple different ways of scoring goals. At their worst, they are an absolute train wreck defensively. They go through periods where they can't find the back of the net, and Dominic Reimann would be better off grabbing a life jacket because he's going to be he's drowning in shots on goal. This wasn't one of those games where they were under siege. Elversberg were very meticulous in the way that they approached this game. They knew that you have two teams that want to dictate the play, and Elversberg were like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to play it a different way. We're happy to absorb, and their defensive growth over from the start of the season to now has been impressive. Frederik Jäkel, in particular, is someone that I liked a little bit more than most at Bielefeld last season. And he's shown in a system that really caters to his play style, he's really thriving. And arguably, he's become their defensive leader. He didn't start the season in the Saarland. So, yeah, I believe in the Tietz system, but it's something we've known for quite a while, where defensively, that is the Achilles heel. And if you can put enough pressure on them defensively, they will break. The dam will just break. And we've seen that on occasions. And here, the two goals, moderately soft. Like, they're very preventable situations. But again, as you said, that's the opportunity they're willing to take. On Elversberg, impressive, very impressive. Eight games unbeaten now in the league. They currently sit in seventh position. Their growth and development has been very good, because look, I would argue they should be further up the table. The Hanover game, they should have won. The Rostock game was an unbelievable outlier. They should never have lost that game.
So this is also the one of the see this I would take is this match against Magdeburg. They would Elversberg would have lost it at the beginning of the season because this was especially they were 2-0 up front against Hannover. They were up front against Rostock. They were up front on the against Kaiserslautern also, and they all the three teams on the first three matches scored the last two goals against Elversberg. Yeah. And now again you are 2-0 in front, and of course the pressure was really high. Magdeburg put on Elversberg, but they are more stable now. Yeah. This is what you said about this improvements in their defensive style of play throughout the season already. So I would say this match, they would have at least it would have become a draw for them at the beginning of the season. And now Elversberg is one of the most interesting teams in the league, because last season they had a run. It's like a flow, like really a flow. They in the Dritte Liga they had really this flow where they were jumping from win to win, and now you get the feeling of how this should look like or can look. So the players that are playing there, a lot of players they have already played in the fourth tier for Elversberg. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting because Horst Steffen, he has a quite clear plan, match plan. And if you want to watch one goal of the Zweite Bundesliga last weekend, you need to see the second goal of Elversberg against Magdeburg. But this was such an elegant, fine passing play of them. And you need to watch it because I think everyone is still underestimating how good Elversberg is. And you said it, without these three matches to the start, they would, I don't know, they would be near to Düsseldorf, to St. Pauli, and they belong to.
Yep.
So they would deserve, or they deserve it because they are so good. And the question is, what happens if other teams are not underestimating Elversberg? Because at the moment, it's like for Magdeburg, it might be something like, okay, Elversberg is coming to us, so we are some kind of the favorites to the bookies. And if you are thinking of this, you also go into a match with some expectations. And even though Elversberg is quite small, is a small team, a small town, whatever, first time in the Zweite Bundesliga, they are quite good. And what a lot of people are underestimating, that they are playing like really quite interesting build-up play, interesting football in general, especially offensively. I mean, Yannick Rochelt, I like him so much. He's such a good player, and he will at least remain in the Zweite Bundesliga after the season, even though Elversberg is like, I don't see how this would happen, is getting relegated again. And there are a few players who are playing really well, also adapting really well to this level of Zweite Bundesliga. And so I don't see where the run of Elversberg will end at this stage. But the next team they face is St. Pauli. So this will be really interesting to watch on Friday.
That it will be. And a really good litmus test to see how far they've come. Because since that 5-0 defeat to Fortuna Düsseldorf, this is where this 8-game unbeaten run has come to a head. And, you know, let's see how they approach this game. But also be interesting to see how St. Pauli approach this game, given Elversberg don't have the poor Carl this week. So it'll be interesting. I'll actually look forward to that game. Magdeburg also have cup game. They got Kiel, and then they're at Hamburg for the Topspiel game. Let's talk about Wiesbaden. All three promoted teams are in this group. They welcomed Rostock in what was a truly weird game. It's just weird. Yes. And the weirdness started about in the half hour when Florian Stritzel completely lost his mind. It's quite common that strikers, attacking players, will try and hinder goalkeepers from getting the quick ball out. He clotheslined Juan Pereira. He just whipped an arm out, and Pereira just went down, you know, maybe a little bit too easily. But referee Christian Dingett, after some help from the video assistant referee, pointed to the spot. Christian Kinsombi steps up, and Stritzel atones for his error. Brilliant save. We love to see it. great goalkeeping, one from my own heart. But he made a bunch of really key saves in this game to keep it at 0-0. Another positive for Wiesbaden was the return of Ivan Pretayen, who scored the two goals in the cup. Then he got injured the following match day in the Zweite Bundesliga. He returns and he is the goal scorer in the end. A shot from Lee, it was a hard save for Kolke to really redirect it out to the wings. Had no help from his defenders. There was two of them that could have raffled it up for Wiesbaden. It's Pretayen, and that's your one and only goal of the game. It means that Wiesbaden have won back-to-back games, and Rostock have won once in their last eight games. And, I think majority of us had them, which was in that sort of bottom six. The biggest thing about Rostock, we spoke about it last week, they know how to make chances. Like, they're one of the teams that can get shots on goal. But when it comes to being a butcher or a surgeon, they are high grade butchers. The third highest grade butcher in big chances missed with 21 this season. Whilst they only had two big chances in this game, the temperature starting to rise in Rostock. Alia Schwarz was the savior last season. They won five of their last six to avoid the relegation in the playoffs. They started like a house on fire, winning three of their opening four, but since then they have just not been able to get anything going. And it's clear that in all the tinkering and trialing to figure out what is the best offensive threat, they still can't find a solution. And against a Wiesbaden side that is fantastic defensively, equal second best, once again they couldn't find a way through the goal.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is, it's a bit difficult for me to speak about Hansa Rostock, how they developed over the season, and that I like Svante Ingelsson a lot. I like the player who is on loan from Stuttgart, Pereira.
Yep, Pereira.
Yeah, and I like to see them play, and they have some kind of new ideas. I don't know if these ideas are coming from Alice Schwarz, because he's known to be a really like conservative player, or not player, but coach. And I think he's the right person there in Rostock. It's maybe to change something during, would be better to do it to, if you have an idea of, we now want to become a team who's playing advanced build-up play, whatever, then you need to do a change during the summer period. And this, after Alex Schwarz is one of the person who rescued the club from getting relegated, of course they were working again together with him. Might be, I mean, you always know what you get when you have Alex Schwarz as a coach. So He coached so many teams, so many clubs in the Zweite Bundesliga. You always know what you get. So you won't get the highest level, the highest footballing level, but you get a team that mostly knows how to avoid a relegation there, yeah. I would say. And after the last, as you said, one win in the last eight games, you know where the season will end, or will what you will face during the course of the season. But so it's not Braunschweig. So to get this clear, so it's another level, also another level of individual quality, another level of the coach itself, and another level maybe also of the ideas of playing. It's other than in Braunschweig. So I wouldn't be so afraid in Rostock.
Yeah, the good thing for them is at least they get, and Braunschweig do this on occasions as well, but they do get the ball forward. They've got versatility in sort of attacking players they can use, whether it's Pereira, Kaipurga, Brumundo, Fuhling. So they've got like plenty of options, and they were very active throughout the summer window. It's just, consistency hasn't really been a feature. But Wiesbaden, defensively, this is the way that they operate. This is, Marcus Kalczynski wants them to be super stable. We know that they are not one of the best defensive teams. They've only scored 10 times this season, second worst in the division. But you know, they are more than happy to slog out a 0-0, 1-1, you know, as long, you know, they do not concede a lot of goals. I think they've only scored multiple goals once this season. But again, you know, the defense just finds a way to hold up. I don't know how sustainable it's going to be over the course of the season, but the defensive three this week, it was Anger, Vukotic, and Madison. Yeah, they held up, because when Rostock were bringing the heat, which was, you know, quite frequently throughout this game, they would, you know, bodies on the line. They got great goalkeeping as well, and yeah, you can see what Kalczynski's trying to do, but it's just, can they balance it out a little bit and get a bit more offensive threat, because they've got pacey players, whether it's Iredale or Lee, who's quite really is an interesting player, and you know, yes, hopefully someone will see more often in the Zweite Bundesliga with years to come, because he's really entertaining player to watch. And yeah, you can see the Kalczynski influence of this squad and what working with this team over the course of a few years has done to help develop them to be a bit more stable than perhaps we thought they would when they did gain promotion last season.
So the thing is that we know Markus Kalczynski quite well at FC St. Pauli, because he is a former coach, and he is, so at this time it was this 4-2-3-1 defensive stability, long balls to a striker, to a high, to a strong striker, and then with three behind the striker, they were able to progress towards the goal. But stability is always the main focus of Markus Kalczynski, and also there in Wiesbaden, and they do it quite well. And this will teams that are, how to say it, just looking for this stability, just looking for not taking any risk in their games. It's not the most beautiful football I've ever seen. If too many teams in this Zweite Bundesliga are playing this type of football, it's getting really, really, really bad for the league in total. But a few teams, I mean, it's not disallowed to play this type of football. Of course not. And if they succeed with it, of course, yeah, there's a reason to play like this. And with those players, like you mentioned Lee, I like him a lot. He's some kind of the, how to say, Lino Tempelmann of Wien Wiesbaden, I would suggest. And Putain, he's the perfect striker for Markus Kalczynski, I would say. The perfect one. He's like, he has a really a lot of presence in aerials. And it's really interesting to see how well this team is built for the idea of Markus Kalczynski. With Benedikt Hollerbach last season, it was also he also likes like fast wingers and stable center backs and stuff like this. And yeah, it's really interesting to see. And I think Wien Wiesbaden will be one of those teams, yeah, that won't have a lot to do with the relegation this season.
We'll see how sustainable this is, but upcoming for Markus Kalczynski's side, they have Fortuna Düsseldorf away.
Ooh.
Which will be a very good defensive battle, because both teams are equal second in goals conceded, as in least goals conceded this campaign. Rostock have got Nürnberg in the cup before they host Hertha. That is a World Feed game, so you can enjoy that one. Check your local listings and guides. It'll be on ESPN Plus for our American listeners, so go check that one out. Schalke and Nürnberg is the other one. That is the World Feed. Let's talk about Greuther Fürth. They hosted Osnabrück on Friday night, and this was a bit of a non-contest in the end. 4-0 to De Kleeblatt. Julian Green opened the scoring with a wonderful free kick, which Lennart Gruhl almost got completely saved, but it squirted through. And then after that, it was just Fürth. Amindo Zieb, you know, 90 seconds into the second half, makes it 2. And then Dixon Abiyama came on as a second half sub. He gets the goal on 74 minutes, and then he assists Tim Limperley just 45 seconds later. A necessary win for Fürth. You know, I've got a weird stat that of the 18 goals this season, 9 of them have been scored in 2 games. The 5-0 against Paderborn on match day 1 and match day 11. They score 4 against Osnabrück. Osnabrück were just bad. Like they tried very hard.
Except Lennart Grill.
Yeah. He's one of not many. They tried very hard to give this game away. Even Branimir Hagoda, a missed penalty, didn't stop Furt from just dominating this game in all facets. And yeah, look, this is exactly what Alexander Zorniger wants his teams to be. Dominant presence, good counter-pressing. And the penalty that they won was of very effective counter-pressing. And David Gnassa just completely lost his mind a little bit and panicked, and Simon Asta was like, "Foul me, I dare you," and he did. and he did. But I just, yeah, I don't. It's not really a whole lot to say about this game without, you know, offering to, you know, without being facetious in a way. Just Furt was so much better than Osnabrück in this game, and it was, the scoreline was more than justified.
Yeah. So, also with the missed penalty, but there were throughout the first half already, there were so many opportunities on the right side with Simon Asta, who was like playing really well. And they were, yeah, Fürth was really much better than Osnabrück. And it's, I don't know how to, yeah, Osnabrück, I don't know. It's going to be a long and hard season for them, I think. And for Fürth, as you said, so they want to be dominant. They want to, be the team in the game that is having the ball, and they, yeah, I don't know. So I don't know. Maybe they want to be a bit like FC St. Pauli at the moment, like Hamburg SV at the moment, who also want to have the ball. Maybe also Magdeburg, but with more defensive stability. So as far as I know, Alexander Zorniger can get quite angry if defensive stability or people are lacking of defensive quality. But I think for Greuther Fürth, it's tricky because they are, yeah, missing a bit the individual quality. It's always, if you're speaking of offensive power, you are always speaking about Branimir Hagota, and that was it. Amindo Zieb was last season a bit of a glimpse there. These 3 goals in 3 matches after Zorniger arrived, of course. Ragnar Ache is missing there now in Kaiserslautern, and I'm not sure if Lamperle, yeah, might be a good opportunity, but it's always Branimir Hagota. And so Michael Fischer, one of the journalists who is working with or was writing about Fürth, he said the best way of the offensive play of Greuther Fürth is Branimir Hagota as a playmaker from the 10 is playing to Branimir Hagota as a striker. So they need him so desperately in all positions of in the offense. So yeah, let's see. So maybe it's tricky there in Fürth. It's tricky. So especially with this focus on Branimir Hagota.
Yeah, we love Michael Fischer. He's come on the podcast before, and he's when we do the season reviews, he usually comes on to help us dissect their season. But they should try cloning. I'm sure someone's got some sort of clone machine that they can get a couple of them, you know, have a top 2 for Goethe. And
maybe they should ask Hertha BSC how they managed it with the Dadais.
Well, wouldn't hurt. Fürth are in action again tomorrow night. They have got Homburg away in the cup. Homburg have got a special kit that they're wearing, which the origins of said kit may be a little bit inappropriate, I suppose, based off a sponsorship.
No.
It's a nice kit though. It's green, so that's that'll make Fürth wonder. Osnabrück have no cup action, but they've got Kiel, and as we mentioned, Braunschweig the week after. So, fascinating period for them as well. That's it. This has been a bit more of an extra large edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Tim,
I need to apologize for that, but I said it to you in advance that if you are recording a podcast with me, it's getting longer than expected.
We were happy to have that extra beefiness of the content. That's it for this week of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We'll be back next week to discuss all of the action from match day 12. We hope you have a fantastic weekend enjoying the best league in the world, and we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.